and welcome to Formula for Success. I'm David Coulthard, and alongside me, as always, in the virtual world is Eddie Jordan. Today, we're going to pay tribute to someone who I was extremely close to on and off the track, and that's the late Gilles de Ferran, who sadly passed away recently at the age of 56. Everyone at Formula for Success extends our deepest condolences to the de Ferran family during this difficult time. And we have the perfect guest to honour the great man on this week's show, and that's Paul Stewart, who paired Gilles and I together in 1990. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on, David.
Yeah, and it's Eddie is at arm's length in another studio far, far away. Thankfully, Paul.
No. Thanks for that, David. Paul, how are you? I haven't seen you for a while. In one way, it's delightful to see you. In another way, it's sad because I know how close you were to Gilles and know how much he owed his career to you and to DC to some extent. But getting a start in any kind of racing is so vital for these drivers. We're hearing it time and time again. So, Paul, you were, if you like, a much younger version of Eddie Jordan. I applaud you for that and the people that you brought through. Gilles was an amazing guy. And I particularly, I wouldn't like to think that I put the two of them together, but Angie, his wife, who I adored, she came. I think she was my first ever PA, if I would like to call them that, but she was my assistant, my friend, my colleague. She was a joy to have. And the connection, David and Paul, the motor racing in that family, it's not all coming from Gilles. I must remind people, if you don't mind me just waxing on here a little bit, but Angie's cousin, she was a Buckland, but her mother was a T, and so Deborah T, the famous girl who does all of the PR stuff in and out of Formula One, Stephen T, who's probably one of the greatest Formula One photographers, and it went through there. Motoring News was something that you couldn't not have on a Wednesday. It always came out a day before Autosport. It had the heart and soul of real racers, so it covered rallying, club racing, and various different types of racing, not just Formula One, and not just the Formula 3 and 3000 or the Formula Ford races. It was a class act, and Angie Buckland was a joy to work with. I remember very, very clearly, 1972, I subjected her to some awful things, but I dumped her in a car with me and a sponsor, and we drove to Nürburgring to see Tommy Byrne doing the European Formula 3 race, only to find out when we got there that there was 6 foot of snow, as often the case would happen at early springtime in Nürburgring. But that was the kind of introduction that Angie got into Formula 1. She wasn't flustered, she wasn't daunted. It was in her blood, motor racing, and the fact that she and Gilles and then other things have happened, which maybe, David, you will relate to in terms of house owning and kids at school and the Dragon School. God, I adore this family. It's such a very sad moment to have to be part of this program.
Yeah, well, lovely words, Eddie, and, teeing up nicely how Angela made her way to Paul Stewart Racing, which is what brought Gilles and I together. And Paul, it was, end of 1989, where I'd just finished my first year in car racing. I'd met Gilles, who was also racing in Formula Ford, and discovered just how quick he was, how focused he was, what an intelligent man he was. And you decided in your newly founded Paul Stewart Racing to put us together in Opel Lotus. So that set us on a route that not only as teammates, but as great friends, that has continued up until his sad passing.
Yeah, well, that was a start of the first year, really, the progression of the staircase of talent. When Camel had come in, and we had the Formula Vauxhall Lotus and European GM Championship, and then Formula 3 and 3000. So you and Gilles were the first two drivers really on the rung at the time. And what a pairing it was. It just seemed to fit right from the start. Gilles had a test at Donington, and he did that successfully. And so we went ahead with him, but DC here didn't want to do the test. He said, if you want me, have me. So you always had one up from Gilles right from the beginning.
Yeah, and during that time, it was a shock to the system in many ways for me having a teammate. I'd never had a teammate in my life before. And, Gilles broke the mold in terms of what expectations of a teammate. We were put together traveling across Europe in a car, sharing rooms together, falling out on the racetrack occasionally together. But through it all, he was always able to separate, wasn't he? The what happens when he's working. And when he worked, he was a deep thinker. He was, you know, if it took me a few minutes to decide in gear ratios, it would take him a few hours. You know, he really analyzed things to the nth degree. But when he left the racetrack, what fun we had all together around barbecues and caipirinhas and, you know, you're the godfather to his son, I'm the godfather to his daughter, so Luke and Anna. And, you know, we've just had such a bond over all those years.
First of all, I know we want to be respectful to Gilles and to his family, but boy, we've had shed some tears over the last few days together and about with the family and so on. So I'm going to try and, when I possible, be appropriately lift the spirits whenever I can, because boy, the three of us, and individually, whatever, we shared everything in terms of, there was no filter between us. That's how it developed, really, over the years. There was zero filter, especially my last conversation with Gilles was the day before he passed away, thankfully, on a FaceTime call. I was parked up at a car wash, and I sat there in this car wash for over an hour talking to Gilles. We never talked about a car once, or McLaren, or anything. And boy, was I lucky to have that call, that time with him then, because Angela came on right at the end of it. And just to see the two of them smiling together is probably, was my enduring last, you know, memory of seeing them like that. But God, he was a serious one when he put his thinking cap on. And I'll give one story, actually. When he finished racing with us in Formula 3000, boy, I got this report of everything, technical report of how to improve the team, how this, that, next thing. You know, I'm not sure I even read the whole thing.
It was so long.
But I never told him that.
Yeah. Bless him. He was a deep thinker. Well, you know, we've had the pleasure of you know, being his friend and racing colleague. Eddie, you also had the pleasure of negotiating with him, but not on motor racing for driving, but on a property. You sold your house to them in Oxford. How was it negotiating with Gilles?
You'll be very pleased to hear this, DC, because I can finally admit that I've had my pants taken down, and it was by none other than Gilles de Foran. That doesn't happen very often, as you will remind everybody, but it did happen on this occasion. But we were keen. Marie was captain of Sunningdale and she was a three handicapper. So she was looking to, we were out of motor racing at the time, and she was keen to move down to Wentworth, where we bought a house. And I needed to sell where we were first. And then, you know, Gilles came and he offered me a price. And Marie said, you can't possibly sell it for that. And so she saw another side of me. She saw the giving side, which I don't admit to very often. But anyway, he came and he offered a price and I accepted it. And sure enough, I could have possibly, if I'd held out, got several hundred thousand pounds more. But the fact is, it was done. It was, we moved on and stuff. And we were friendly and I absolutely loved Angela. I mean, she was the darling of our house. And but then she spent all of those early years as EJR, Eddie Jordan Racing, the Martin Brundle era. And Martin will have a lot to say, of course, about Angie. She was gorgeous. Gary Anderson, I saw some of the tributes and the, you know, the compliments that they all have paid to that family, because it was something special. Because it was motor racing. If ever you wanted a family where motor racing, I know in your household, Paul, you have your dad, of course, and your mum used to do the pit wall and stuff like that. But this was different. This was, you know, it wasn't just Angie. It was her cousins, her mother, her father. Everyone was involved in that whole motor racing build up. That family has been adored, revered, and cherished for a very long time. And the passing of Gilles is something that has touched so many people that we want to give back to that family.
Yeah, well, I think, Eddie, that you know, having spent time with Paul here, with his family, there's been a great support network around. But the strength of character of Angela, Anna and Luke is something that Gilles would be incredibly proud of. It's obviously they're hurting, you know, we all are. And the celebration and the memory of Gilles, the fact that it's touched so many people, is you know, a testament to the man. Absolutely, we, you know, we've obviously, as Paul mentioned, we've been between tears and laughter. You know, I made the comment about you know, when they made Gilles, to use the old cliche, they broke the mold. Well, anyone who knew Gilles well, he had a huge head, a huge set of shoulders, so you know, an unusable mold for anybody else, the shape of him. But yeah, what a very you know, incredible individual, really, Paul. And, you know, that's something that you've had many different drivers come through Paul Stewart Racing in the early days in Stewart Grand Prix, but, and you've got, of course, relationships with all of them, but there was a deep and personal relationship with Gilles, a bond that has lasted his lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, the bond I had with him, and the bond that we all had with him in the team, I mean, the bond that you had with him, that my father has with him, my mother has, my brother, you know, it's quite unique, because I can't think of any other driver other than you. I'm trying to cast through the list of drivers, but certainly that bond that was something that we had all the way, you know, for so long, really. Now, there was one moment I'm thinking about here when you were both racing for Paul Stewart Racing. And my father's been one that's always not very happy about anyone going skiing while being racing drivers. But
yes, I remember so this.
DC and Gilles and Angela, and I don't know which girlfriend you might have had along at the time, David.
I don't know which one it was.
Had arranged a ski trip. And my father got to find out about it, and he somehow managed to track you down. I never said anything, by the way. God knows how he found out. And then he called up either you or Gilles, called up DC, and said, you know, open the conversation up, and I'll hand over to you on that one.
Because yeah, well, I was living in a house with a family, the Parius family, Brian and Don Parius in Milton Keynes, who very kindly opened their home to me when I joined Paul Stewart Racing. And I didn't have a mobile back in those days, so he called the Parius household. They handed the phone over to me, and all that Jackie said was, "Don't ski." And the only thing that I could say in response is, "Gilles going as well." We were busted.
Hang on a second. Had you gone by that point?
No. This was prior to going skiing.
But I thought there was a call also for some reason, you know, so hi, and what are you up to? And it kind of, you had to realize he knew something,
yeah,
and then you had to confess.
But yeah, anyway. No, Jackie had his spider senses out there, and he could always track down when we're getting up to mischief. And we had a lot of mischief over the years. But for the listeners who never had the privilege of meeting Gilles, I think it's important that they understand that although he had his eyes set on Formula One, circumstance, finance, opportunity didn't allow him to get more than a couple of tests, one with Williams and one with Arrows at the time. But he found himself in America, 2000, 2001 IndyCar champion, you know, Indy 500 winner. He still holds the fastest qualifying lap ever at 241.42 miles an hour, a race that he went on to win. I was there, actually. It was in Fontana. When he did that qualifying lap, absolutely incredible to have that, as you know, to be one of the fastest men ever in a race car. It's a great legacy.
You know, he certainly owned his time in IndyCars. It was respected by everyone he drove for. He was in control. He was thoughtful, and he had a good sense of humor. I think people just enjoyed having Gilles being part of his team as much as we did. At Paul Stewart Racing. And Gilles and I were teammates in 93. And boy, there was not one difficult, bad word ever. And we just sort of drove together, had a great time. And I do remember, actually, because Angela DeFerrin, or Buckland, as I say, she we finished racing in Manicourt, and she was back in London. And then we left. Angela had been promised that Gilles would get back that night, but we got caught so much traffic, and Gilles was stressing about it. We pulled off into Disneyland in Paris, and Gilles had to announce to Angela that we're not making it home. We're going to be in Disneyland. And boy, he was stressing about that. That's how much he loved Angela, and he always did. But so I just want to say he was just a beautiful teammate to have, and I just love those memories.
Yeah, yeah. I only ever had one fallout with him, and that was in Zolder at the beginning of that Opel Lotus season 1990, where I ran into the back of him on the first lap and punctured his tyre. I went on to finish on the podium. He spent the remainder of the race leaning over the pit wall, giving me the wanker sign every time I drove past, which was, you know, I understood he was frustrated. And we had to drive back from Belgium all the way to the UK, taking the boat, just the two of us. And we didn't fall out in as much that he just didn't talk to me for the entire journey. And then next day we picked up as if it was, you know, everything was just normal again.
I just wanted to ask you two guys, because I think it's kind of important to know. We talk about the difference between American style racing and British. Of all the people, and Paul, of all the drivers you've had and all the drivers I've had, I'm not sure I have ever come across anyone quite as horizontal or as laid back or as easygoing as Gilles, or at least that was the outer perception and the appearance. And I often wonder, did that play against him in some respects? Because we know, looking at somebody and appreciating and see how they were, you know how rough and tough Formula One was or could be. And I'm just saying, did that prevent him, or did it hurt him, hinder him? Call it what you like. What's your review?
Well, yes, in some ways, possibly. I mean, the really most important test he had was with Arrows, and he was out the car and was walking back to the garage, and his head was down like he would be thinking deeply. And he whacked his head it's a big head, as we already identified, against the belly locker. You know how you'd remember all that, how they're all sticking out the side. And he didn't see it, and he whacked his head. And that was the end of his test of the day, because he was bleeding, and he couldn't go back. I think if he had finished that test that day, he would have given an F1 drive. So maybe he was thinking a little too hard. But it happened the right way, you know, that he had a long career in IndyCars, and, you know, it was the right way. But yeah, he was a deep thinker, and it certainly helped the team out. It helped me out. It helped David out. As you said, he's thinking about his gear ratios and everything. So I think it probably has a whole package. It's the way he was, and that's why we loved him too, by the way. You've talked about Angela quite a lot here, and, you know, I should also say that they met, Angela and Gilles met at Paul Stewart Racing. And so I hired Angela. I think at the time it was at Jardine PR, and she came to us. But I always say that I work for Angela. So whenever I said I work for Angela at Paul Stewart Racing, because that's how it was. Boy, she got... So the two of them together had a really great little combination. And I'm also very happy that they met while racing... Well, Gilles was racing with David at Paul Stewart Racing. There was a famous weekend, which I only have heard about, where it was a race or test, I think, somewhere in the south of France, Paul Ricard, and obviously Paul Stewart Racing had got round to hiring a little house because Angela thought it'd be a good idea and to arrange everyone together. And I think it became quite a scene, that little trip.
Yeah, well, thankfully, because we needed time to acclimatise to the time zone change from London to the south of France, I think we had that house for a week, courtesy of Paul Stewart Racing. And it was a house where, you know, Gilles and Angela were there. I was there with a gentleman called Dave Boyce, who looks after my son in karting and is known to many who listen to this podcast. There was Stephen T, there was Deborah T, there was Julian Bailey, there was Keith Sutton, the photographer. And we had a brilliant week building up to going racing as a support race in Paul Ricard. And of course, everything sort of centered around mealtimes and maybe a wee dram. And Gilles was never more happy than standing at a barbecue. Director True. Of meat.
Yeah, usually in a pair of swimsuit, swim shorts. Whatever.
Too small.
Too small, belly hanging over, cigarette in mouth, and the wee dram in the other hand. And he was a very good chef, by the way. He loved his meat and loved cooking in his barbecue outside.
He did indeed. And you know, that a life well lived is, I think, the expression that would sum up, even though too short, he certainly crammed a lot into his journey of life. And it's great that we're able to enjoy celebrating his achievements and that of his own unique personality. He, like both of you, got into team ownership and has been involved in management in Formula One teams, the old Honda team, which has become Mercedes, and of course, two stints at McLaren, as well as having his own sports car racing team. So is that something that, you know, someone like myself who's never been involved in the management of a team, did that give you guys another little bond, another connection? Because I guess, you know, drivers, we have a bond through knowing what it's like to be in the race car, but you've also got that bond with them through ownership and management and the pressures that go with that.
You know, there's so many occasions where drivers don't get on and don't talk to each other and various other things. I just think that the team in itself was a much stronger bond. And that's why when you would have somebody like Gilles included in the bond, he was so easy to work with. He was so easy and so enjoyable to have in the team because he was a 1,000,000% team player. He was such a devoted personality within the team and only striving for the best for the team, of course, for himself as well. But, you know, I think it was different, David. I can't really answer directly the question, but, you know, that's the way I see it. I always thought, as we're all in this together, guys, let's see who's in the trench and make sure that even no matter how insignificant you might think that person is, you never know when you're going to need him. And so, therefore, everyone has to be able to fight together.
Gilles was identified as a deep thinker who wouldn't engage in an issue without having a proper understanding of everything that was involved. So he wouldn't just throw in his 2 pence worth just for the sake of it. He'd really understand. So his advice would slot in really well. And, you know, I think it's in particular sort of manifested so well this year at McLaren because he was deeply involved in overseeing many of the things and little changes and what not to change.
Yeah, well, he had an engineering background, so he was very drawn to understanding the engineering, the science behind it. And he was at his happiest at the track, affecting change, working with people, whether it was, you know, when Fernando Alonso went to race in America, he was the man, the go-to person for Fernando to lean on for advice on how to tackle the ovals. And that you know, developed their relationship to another level, as well as, you know, the roles that you've just mentioned, Paul, with McLaren. And he's really, you know, there with Andrea Stella and, you know, with Zak Brown, effecting change in that team and quietly and effectively empowering the engineers and the drivers to exploit the potential. Eddie, you being older and wiser,
I see you persniggering there. Don't you fool me. Go on.
No, we're all in the same boat on this
one,
Eddie.
You're creeping,
don't worry.
David. What do you want this time?
No, I'm not. I'm actually sincerely seeking your counsel. And, you know, life is full of ups and downs and tragedy and losses is part of the journey of life. And touch wood, selfishly, I've not had to experience too much of that. And we all deal with loss in different ways. And what I was seeking was just your sort of philosophy on it. And you know, you've got a big family, a big bond, and I guess the Irish way of celebrating life, you know, you do wakes, which you have the deceased with the family in the home, and that's not something that we do in Scotland. But I was just really reaching out, EJ, to gather some thoughts from you on, you know, how we deal with the passing of loved ones.
Our attitude on a situation is like this, is life is not forever. We will all die. That's the only certainty that we all have, that there will come a time that the shutter has to be pulled down and that's it for you. So you've got to live for the moment and you've got to do the very best you have to do for yourself, for your family and for your loved ones. So I think Gilles did that. So he has left us in very good shape. And I just feel that we have to be very sensible about death. It's not something that anyone ever likes talking about, but it's inevitable. And it's happened to Gilles. But let's just think about this. I would much prefer to have been in that car as Gilles de Ferran than being locked up in a home where I am struggling for 10 years at a time. And we all know that longevity is fantastic, but it's the quality of the longevity. Let's not be too harsh on ourselves or whatever the tragedy, and I know it's very painful, but Gilles died doing exactly what he wanted to do, nothing better. He was driving a race car with his son in the sunshine in Miami. Let's think about that. I think the joy that he had just prior before he died was immense. And that will be, if you like, a blessing for all those people around him to think about what Gilles went through, because I think he had a lot of joy in his life.
Eddie, I'm going to be careful here because I'm going to start tearing up. I don't want to do that on this show in front of David. But, you know, we're talking about all this sort of calm and sort of easygoing side of Gilles. But, you know, on another side, you know, he really was, had so much determination. And in some cases, I mean, there's one time when we used to do the driving days at Alton Park with my father.
Yeah.
And Gilles was out in another Ford Escort or whatever it was on the track. And my father was busy showing Helio the smooth lines. And Gilles came herring pass, got it wrong, out on the grass, passing my father in this car. And Helio, all he could think was, oh, my God. And I think my father gave up some comment. But that is Gilles. I mean, in a car, he certainly could grit his teeth and get on with it.
Yeah. Well, he had a small apartment, a one-bedroom apartment in Milton Keynes when we were teammates. And that road back to his apartment, there was a particular roundabout where the sort of inner curbing was beautifully presented for him to get half of his Renault 19, as it was, up this curbing. And you know, we never failed to go through that roundabout without the car being on two wheels. But we established our positions in life and in the kitchen, whereas he did the cooking and I did the cleaning. So that's why I've got these very soft, delicate hands from all the washing up. And yeah, so we're going to miss those moments. But he definitely made his mark both sides of the pond, which I think is something truly remarkable. That he may have had his racing success in America behind the wheel, but his influence on Formula One will on go.
It was properly felt. It might encourage a few people to go for checkups as well, maybe, possibly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think actually we'll finish. Eddie, you talked about him being in a car with his son, and what a way to go. You got to go one day. And that was Gilles' rationale. He was like, look, I'm fine. I'm never going to grow old, and I don't really want to grow old. And it used to piss us off because he said, let's just go for a checkup. You know, selfishly, as the Three Musketeers, whatever, we did a lot together. We didn't want to lose him. So anyway, to go out and actually put his foot on the brake to slow the car down with his son next to him, that's a mark of the man, onwards and upwards.
Absolutely.
Paul, just one small thing to finish. Sorry, just because you brought it up. 12 years ago, my daughter was getting married and suddenly I was told I needed some stents. And I just would make this point to the people and the anchors. My cardiologist said, nobody, she said to me, should die of a heart attack. And Paul, that is a very good thing, what you've just said. People need to make sure they are in control of their own bodies. And please, folks out there, it's not just that, it's the cancers and it's everything else. I think if we are sensible about our way of life and how we project it in the future and how long we need it to be, please use all the medical skills that are out there for us. I urge you, please, to take notice what Paul said.
Yeah, absolutely. Get your checkups. And it's been an emotional one, but thank you all for joining us. I hope you enjoyed hearing us talk about Gilles. The stories could go on and on. We've loved honouring this great man who will be sadly missed. Remember, you can follow Formula for Success on Spotify and whenever you listen to your podcasts. And you can find us on social media with the handle at F1 for Success. Paul, a closing thought to this particular podcast?
Thank you for having me on the show. For Gilles, I love him, always will. I love his family. Our family loves his, and luffily, you know, his kids will all get together and we'll continue living on the dream.
And celebrating his life, indeed. Eddie, as the elder statesman of this podcast.
No growl today, as a great mark of respect for Gilles. I will miss him, and Bucco, please be strong. I'm here for you anytime you ever, ever need a second view or a thought or whatever it is. Please lift the phone. You've got a very strong Jordan family behind you. We love you and your family. Stay strong.
Dear listeners, in memory of Jules de Ferran.